So it's the first week of November here in Minneapolis, and it's just starting to cool off. It's actually still pretty nice in the 50s and 60s, but you've decided to take a little trip all next week. Where are you headed?
I can't even say it without giggling. I'm going to Cabo Press in Cabo, Mexico, at the invitation of Chris Lema, who I met at a conference last month, and we hit it off. And he hosts a conference every year in Cabo San Lucas that's for mostly for folks in the WordPress space, but like founders of different sorts. And one of the things I'm really interested in and excited about is the format of this conference is there aren't really formal big talks. There are a series of kind of hosted conversations. And so part of my role is to go and co-host a couple of conversations around topics like mental health and some of the unique struggles that founders experience. And the big, interesting piece for me is that all of these conversations happen in the pool so that no one is distracted with their phones and their laptops and such. So I think it's a really interesting take on a conference, and I'm super excited to be part of it and really looking forward to the sun and the company and like just making some good connections and learning a lot from the folks I'm going to spend the week with.
Yeah, I mean, it honestly sounds less like a conference and more like a small founder retreat slash networking gathering. I mean, it's like 40 people or 50 people, and I think they're handpicked, aren't they? I mean, it's gonna be pretty amazing, I think.
Yeah, I'm really excited, really grateful to go. And thanks in advance for handling the kids while I'm gone.
All week, yeah, no problem. While it starts to get colder up here, and you're in Cabo San Lucas, it's gonna be good. So, on my side of the fence, I've been planning for MicroConf with with Mike and Xander, and we're doing two MicroConfs in April. And luckily, there's not a ton of work to be done for us because we've hired Xander to handle so much of that. So planning means, having a few phone calls and not doing a ton of the legwork. But things are coming together. We're already selling tickets. Actually, if you're listening to this and you are interested in coming and hanging out with, other bootstrap startup founders, you should head to microconf.com, get on the mailing list there, or by the time this airs, actually, you may even be able to buy tickets if there are any left. The other thing is I wanted to call out some iTunes reviews. We haven't talked about these in a while, but we have 41 worldwide 5-star iTunes reviews, and we really want to thank you guys for doing that. The most recent ones are from Aaron Dolson, who says, "Great to hear how these two navigate their careers and family life in such a functional way. It was very interesting listening to all the changes going on and the various ways they adjust. I found this after listening to Startups for the Rest of Us and searching for other podcasts with Rob. It's gold, and I'm glad they found their way to Minneapolis. Great place to raise a family." And our other one is from Luis Perez, PhD. He says, "I definitely lean towards tactical rather than mindset. I'm glad I put that aside to give this podcast a shot. There have been several episodes that were exactly what I needed to listen to. The format of the whole podcast is earnest and high quality. I'd recommend it to anyone who's even thinking about starting a business or in the midst of large transitions in their life." So thank you guys so much for the reviews. The reviews help keep us motivated. They help increase our ranking in iTunes so we can get more listeners. And it just, helps encourage us to continue putting out high quality episodes. So even if you don't write a full review, if you log into iTunes and just click 5 stars, that's all you need to do. You don't have to write sentences about your thoughts, although we do love to hear them. And when we feel sad at some evenings, we will sit and read through all these reviews, and it makes us feel really happy. So appreciate it.
That's actually very true.
I know. I've totally done that. Over a glass of wine, I'll read them to you.
I'm not doing anything meaningful in my life. Oh, no. Oh, wait. I'll read iTunes reviews.
It's good. It really is.
We plan to talk through the issues faced by startup founders and the people close to them.
That overused phrase, work-life balance.
It is an amazingly focusing time.
This is what we do, aside from our families. This is our whole work life.
I am also known as Dr. Wine.
This is a little bit non-traditional.
A little more zen in the startup life.
Zen founder.
Those days were a mental struggle.
I have been stressed in the past, and I know that I will be in the future.
A founder and his or her significant other will both get value from the episode. So what are we talking about today?
Well, I thought I might invite you into a maybe more traditional psychological conversation than maybe we typically have in the podcast, but I've had lots of conversations with folks in the last couple of weeks where they've referred to sort of internal conflict, like, well, part of me wants to do this and part of me wants to do that. And there's really a couple of major psychological theories that address this sense of having dissenting parts within one person. And so I thought it'd be cool to sort of talk through this and reflect on the ways that the different voices in our heads shape our behavior and shape how we sort of approach our work, whether that's as founders or as, you know, family members or other people who are doing interesting things in life. Do you think you're up for that kind of conversation?
I'm all up for it. When I look at this outline and I see a bunch of words, I don't know what they mean. I'm a little concerned, but I think it'll be good.
Well, you know, can you relate to that sort of like tension within you, that there's like these competing parts within yourself, or you're hearing like sort of differing voices in your own head?
Oh, for sure. Every day.
Where have you noticed that?
Well, I mean, I think I notice it when, you know, when I'm under any type of pressure, or there's like a hard decision to be made and I'm torn between two endpoints, or if I'm under a lot of pressure, right? And you're having like during negotiations and during kind of trying to close this deal, there were times that it's like, well, should we just cave on this one thing? And it's hard.
So one of the ways of thinking about this comes from object relations theory. And I will sort of spare you the details and unpacking of what that means. I just want to, you know, like cite my sources like a good academic. But this theory says that, or postulates that there are, as we go through life, we sort of collect internalized representatives of other people. So this is where, I know it sounds complicated, but this is where we have sort of that, like the voice of our mother or our father. So that when you're in the midst of a negotiation, you might hear your mother saying like, you need to be nice or behave, or it's okay, you should give up what you want so that you can be nice to your friend. And that's this sort of voice that lives in your head that comes from a specific relationship, and it teaches you something about how you're supposed to be or supposed to operate in a given situation. And so maybe sort of similar or the same example, you're in the midst of a negotiation and you hear like the voice of your father basically saying something like, take no prisoners, son, you know, this sort of hyper-masculine, like, get them for all you can. And both of those voices are part of your history, and they're both part of you, literally you, because I know that you both want to be nice and kind and also a good negotiator. But I think when we hear those competing voices in our heads, it can get really sort of conflictual as to what is the right path for us, and can be a source of some distress, especially in the midst of a stressful situation when we sort of are not of one mind about what's the best way to proceed.
Yeah, I'd have to imagine this is fairly common in all of us. I think any time that, I mean, you know, negotiation is one example, but I was thinking of being at work, let's say 10 years ago when I still worked a salaried gig and I had different bosses who would interact in different ways. And some were kind of mean and gruff, and some were like super nice, and some were irritating and micromanaging. And I think each of those situations, if it's something that just doesn't perfectly align with who I am and how I want to work, I think some part of them always is somehow involved in my history. And I think the reasons that each of us, I'm just making this up at this point, but it's like, I feel like the reason that I work a certain way has so much to do with these voices and with the way, in essence, that I was raised, you know, in these early years and the earlier lessons that I was taught by these people, whether it's your parents or whether it's perhaps friends, but probably most likely, you know, other influential adults in your life.
And you're absolutely right. This is like perfectly normal development. We're talking about the voices in your head, and we obviously, you know, don't mean voices that are sort of psychotic voices. These are just normal voices that you acquire over the course of your life. And I think it is important to have a handle on these voices for a couple of reasons. One is that they, especially those parental voices, those the mommy daddy voices, they sort of shape our beliefs about what others expect of us. They shape our beliefs about what we should do. They shape whether we think that we're inferior and we have something to prove, or whether we're special and should be treated a certain way. So a lot of our conceptualization of whether or not we're lovable and acceptable the way we are is based on these kinds of voices from our childhood.
So mothers and fathers, you know, I get that. I think a lot of us have kind of heard that model, whether actually being in therapy or whether just hearing the jokes of, you know, Freud saying, tell me about your mother, and trying to figure out how that shaped you. What other model, I'm sure there's dozens of them, but what other model do you think maybe fits what we're talking about here?
First of all, don't knock Freud. Although he did a lot of cocaine, there were a lot of things he was right about.
Oh, I wasn't knocking him at all. I just think that's like the, when you think of like the typical satire of a...
The stereotype.
Yeah, the stereotype. There you go. Not satire. Yeah, it's always a guy with a, you know, was he German? It was like a German accent or Austrian accent, right? Saying, tell me about your mother. And it's from him. So I know dude was legit.
Okay. So another model, and one that I've been thinking a lot about lately, is internal family systems. And this is a contemporary model by Dr. Richard Schwartz. And if this is interesting to you, his program or his center is called the Center for Self-Leadership, and it's selfleadership.org. So if what I'm about to say makes you curious and you want more than like a 10-minute version of it, then check out that resource. So his argument is that within each of us, we have our own little family model. So we have the managers. These are voices within us that are responsible, they're motivated, they're very functional, they maintain control. This is sort of like the adults that live inside of us. And for most of us, these are the voices that are most active. But then he argues that we have within us these things that are what he calls exiles. And there are parts of us that are maybe more childlike. There are parts that have been hurt, that are vulnerable or weak or afraid. And the managers really try to keep the exiles under wraps because they're the parts of us that sort of that fall apart or are able to be hurt, maybe less functional and need protecting. And then he has this third dimension of the cast of characters that lives within us. And he calls this subset firefighters. And their job is to kind of be this emergency response to keep the exiles, those sort of sad, vulnerable, hurt parts, to keep them under control when they're sort of in danger of feeling hurt or getting flooded. And the firefighters are important because they're really tend to be kind of impulsive. This is the part of us that if we're having a really bad day or we've had a bad week, something has disrupted us, we might go out to the bars and have 8 drinks and sort of like lose our minds. The firefighter is trying to eliminate and drown the pain, trying to cut it off. So this is sort of this way of coping that's not necessarily very well managed. It's not under control. It's kind of drastic. And so these voices live in our heads. The manager wants to be in control, but the exiles need tending to, or they're emotional, they're hurt, they're vulnerable, they're sad. And then the firefighters are sort of these extreme actions that we're all prone to in different ways. It's those addictive behaviors, those numbing behaviors, those escape behaviors that make it so that we attempt not to feel pain.
And so as an individual, are you one of these, or do you tend to be a combination of parts of multiple?
As an individual, the whole cast of characters is present inside of you. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So yeah, you're not one thing. Although Richard Schwartz argues that in the midst of like sort of all of this chaos, there is a true self. There is a part of you that is your core self. That's kind of your true voice. That's not hyper-focused on management and efficiency. That's not particularly vulnerable and weak. That's not impulsive. So the true self is maybe a combination of some of these attributes, but it's not as consumed with functioning in order to prevent pain or to prevent fear. The true self is sort of in the middle of the storm.
Man, family really screws you up, don't they?
Well, they screw you up and they also make you great. So it's both ways. It's like love. Like it can totally screw you up or it can be the most happy, blissful experience. You gotta risk the crappiness to get the good stuff.
Okay. So you were saying that basically the voices that we talked about in object relations theory can cloud your true self, that there is a true self under there that can stem out of these kind of these different models. Can you find it? Like, is the goal to find that, or just to know when the voices or the internal family systems firefighter impulse is coming out and identify it and to try to get to your true self? Or what is it?
Yeah, I think the goal of all of us in our adult development is to feel most comfortable and have our true self voice be loudest. And that means that we're no longer easily swayed by whatever voice of excessive guilt we've retained from our mother. And we're no longer excessively afraid of letting our vulnerable or hurt parts out into the world. So it's like all of these pieces, whether we're talking about object relations or whether we're talking about internal family systems, all of these pieces have a place within ourself. And it's only when they get to run wild and shape our behavior without any counterbalance, where we're asking the question, is this really me? Is this really what I want? Is this really how I feel? When they're too powerful and they go unchecked, that's when we run into danger and start acting out of shame or out of avoidance or out of escape instead of out of who we really are.
Yeah, I could see that. Got it. And so I'd have to imagine based on your upbringing and how positive it was or how traumatic it was, that some folks may have a real difficulty kind of finding their true self ever. And they may be so overshadowed by the voices of the family or by those manager exile firefighter roles that they're kind of always hearing the voices and always in those modes. Is that accurate? And that's kind of those are the folks that may have a harder time kind of breaking out of it. Whereas folks who maybe had a really healthy upbringing will still have some elements of these, but it'll be less negatively impactful on their ability to function?
Generally speaking, yes. I mean, I think the more acceptance and the more attention that our parents gave to our true self, like the more it was okay for us to just really be who we are and follow our curiosity and be creative and sort of be our separate own self, like the better equipped we are to continue to be an adult self. But especially when there's been intrusive parenting or when we weren't sort of listened to or respected as autonomous entities, and especially when there's been like trauma or a history of abuse, that true self voice doesn't have as much space to grow because there's so much emergency response that's required. And that doesn't mean that people can't be successful founders if they've had this kind of background, but it does mean that, you know, it's something to sort of understand how those early life experiences are continuing to pop up in our heads and the ways in which we seek to escape or avoid or burn it all down when we begin to feel afraid or too vulnerable.
Right. And so one of the dangers is that you can basically be constantly responding to other people's expectations and demands in a way that may not be healthy for you. Or in a way that is just not, it's not allowing you to be your true self or to really achieve as much as maybe you should. So maybe you have a crappy relationship with your manager and it's because they remind you of your dad, or maybe it's you're conflicting with coworkers and that makes you really stressed out. It makes you hate work when in fact, maybe it just isn't that big of a deal, right?
Where I think in my own life, I was raised to be a very sweet and accommodating, dare I say, submissive woman. That was sort of the version of femininity that was present in my family and in my, you know, in my extended family and community.
Sounds like you.
Yeah. You know, I've retained some pieces of it, but I think if I had let that voice continue to shape my behavior, it would have been really dangerous for me. And it would have been, given the kind of work that I want to do, if I sort of acquiesced to what everyone wanted of me all the time, I would have been totally fried as a professional. You know, I wouldn't have been able to have boundaries and say, no, this isn't good for me. I'm not going to do that. That's my true voice. My true voice is to say, hey, this is the work that I love. I'm going to do it. And I need to do it in this way in order for me to be my best. But the voice of my, maybe not my literal mother, but the voice of sort of my community about what I should do is like at all costs, take care of other people. And so again, listening to that voice without checking it, without saying, wait, that's going to kill me eventually. That's not possible for me to do and be successful. That's a voice that I have to, like, it's still in there somewhere. She's pretty quiet at this point, but I have to like listen for when that voice is coming out and sort of remind her like, no, that's not actually possible. I can't do that. I can't be successful at that.
But I mean, it feels like they can kind of catch off guard at different times, right? I mean, they can be a source of self-sabotage that maybe sneaks up on you when you're vulnerable, when you're tired or depressed or anxious or under stress.
Absolutely. And I think, again, all these voices are really messages about who we should be and what we should do. And unless we have a strong sense of ourselves, it can be difficult to combat them. And I think in the worst case scenario, you have some of these like firefighters come in and you make extremely bad decisions because you're trying to eliminate distress or you're trying to protect a part of you that feels afraid. And when you eliminate fear by, you know, either chemically altering yourself or, I don't know, cheating on your spouse or hiding money away or, you know, doing something shady with money because you want to try to protect yourself from financial risk. I mean, there's just lots of ways in which we get into these patterns of, again, wanting to protect ourselves from feeling fear and then not always making the best decisions.
Cool. So let's talk a little bit. I mean, we've kind of, you know, we've defined this. I think I'd imagine folks listening to this probably are starting to think about, you know, perhaps what their own voices are, what their own leanings are in terms of the family system stuff. What are some strategies for kind of coping with this, right? And it's not strategies for curing it, right? I mean, this is part of who you are, but it's strategies for like managing it and not letting it wreck you and not, I don't know, not sending you off track at the moment when you kind of need to be on track the most.
Yeah, I think especially if you know you're entering a period of stress and you find that there's sort of this swirl of noise in your head and there's a lot of parts of you that feel like they're in tension with each other, it can be helpful to like write down some of the different messages that you feel and even name the voices and sort of say like, oh, this is the voice of my older brother telling me I'm not good enough, or this is the voice of my mother saying I should always behave like a lady. Name the voices, let them be their own character in a play so that they don't feel like they're all equally you. So that might literally involve sitting down and sort of writing down some of these thoughts and giving them a label, assigning them a speaker role again, so they don't feel so muddled and they don't feel equally important. A second thing that I think is really helpful is to keep clear reminders about your true self. So really identifying a couple of core values that define you, that you know, hey, when it comes down to it, this is who I want to be. And that might be someone who's creative, someone who's generous, someone who's hardworking, someone who's, you know, whatever attributes really exemplify who you are. And keep those reminders around you somewhere, whether you're like Rob and you tattoo create on your wrist or...
I was just going to say that I use the memento model. If you've seen that movie, that's how I'm reminding myself constantly. I have a quote on my arm that says, never apologize for your art. I mean, these are all things that are things I've discovered about myself. You know, we've never talked about this and the true self, the whole concept, but it makes sense. And as we say this, that's exactly, you know, a big part of what I've done here with tattoos.
And not quite as permanently, but like I made an art piece a couple of years ago that has embedded into the painting these different words that shape who I want to be. And so it's in our kitchen, and every time I walk by it, which is multiple times a day, I sort of catch a glimpse of it. And it's just a reminder of, okay, this is what I'm about. This is what I'm doing. And I think when you have that clarity about like, this is my true self, it's maybe a little bit aspirational, but it's really within like, hey, this is who I am and what I'm about in the world. When that is a clear, strong voice, I think the other voices, the sort of peripheral voices, the voices from the past, you know, the manager, like hyper-functional, the exile, the really afraid, or the firefighter who's like ready to burn it all down. Like those voices become more distinct and more distant when your true center of your line, true clear voice is loud and well-formulated in your own mind. another way to get at that is to journal, is to really practice cultivating your particular voice.
I feel like when I go on retreats 2 or 3 days on my own and asking about what part of the last year has been great, what part has sucked life, that's a helpful reminder to me of kind of who's really in there, you know, and oftentimes getting back to serving that person rather than anything else.
I think another tactic is really to notice fear, notice discomfort, notice feeling raw or vulnerable, and create like safe places for those feelings to have an outlet. So therapy, talking with your spouse, journaling, retreats, so much of the trouble that people get into with these conflicting voices in their heads has to do with certain parts of us finding those more sensitive emotions unacceptable and trying to like shut it down or protect against it. If you are afraid of your own fear and you're trying to drown those feelings with like a lot of alcohol or sex addiction or whatever, like that's where you're not able to be comfortable with like the muckier, more vulnerable, more emotional side of your own self. And that's where those protective parts of you step in and try to say, we got to shut this down because it's not safe. So if you create safe places for hard feelings, you're much less vulnerable to have part of you try to sort of kill off those sensitive feelings. Does that make sense? Does that make sense, Rob?
It does. Yeah, no, it does.
I guess one other strategy, and this might feel like the most fringe one, but I've done this quite a bit as a therapist, and it actually can be pretty effective, is to have a conversation with those voices. So there's a voice in you that, again, wants to just escape and run away. And talk to that voice. Say, okay, voice, or you know, give it a name. Okay, Howard the coward. Like, why do you want to run away? What's so dangerous about what's happening right now? And really let that part of you have a moment to speak to you. Let that part of you get the opportunity to sort of air some material. And that's generally not scary or threatening. It's usually the parts of us that we want to hide that cause us the most trouble when we ignore them. So write it down, get it out, talk about it, have a conversation with that scared part of you, that scared little boy that lives in you, and let that part of you have some space. Otherwise, that part of you might try to sabotage what you're doing in order to get some attention.
Right. I think that's a big part of this. I kind of view it like, as I'm viewing it as a layman, that like self-sabotage is a big part of this. And I've seen it in friends I've had and in coworkers and such, where it's just a repeated behavior that from the outside, you know, is not a good behavior, but they don't see it, right? Because it's this invisible force. It's a voice that they keep listening to, but they don't realize they're listening to it. And I think the other thing is, when it's not self-sabotage, it can often be a reaction to other people's expectations, other people's demands, or even the environment you're in, you know, in terms of the stresses and stuff. And it's almost like these things can flare up, and, you know, you can be a lot more scared than you should be based on, you know, a normal person's reaction isn't that bothered by whatever, loud noises or cold or just something. But if you have this, you know, this thing built into you where you really have a lot of fear or discomfort or, you know, excess vulnerability or surrounding a certain aspect because of how you were raised or because how you grew up, it can be a really big deal. And I think the strategies you've laid out here in terms of trying to figure out what your true self is, trying to figure out where the voices are, where they come from, and then trying to figure out where you fit maybe in the manager, exile, firefighter roles, I think is something that each of us can use to interact better with coworkers and with family. And probably also to just treat ourselves better and feel better about who we are and what we're up to.
Yeah, I think the goal is to have this sense of equanimity, like just calm within our own internal world. So when we talk about having an internal family system, it's these parts of us that we want to live in harmony. And, you know, like in any family, there's harmony when people sort of understand their roles and are comfortable with them and know what parts they play. And I think that's what we're after when we, you know, as a mental health professional, I'm wanting to help people kind of work well with parts within themselves that are in conflict or feel out of balance. There's a space for everybody, basically. There's a space for all the voices. So I know this was a meatier psychological topic. How's your head, Rob?
That's good. I'm getting there. I think I'll have to listen to this. I'll have to listen to this whole thing again so that I understand it.
Well, thanks for hanging in there with me. And obviously, if folks are listening and they have questions about this, there's some great resources, particularly the Center for Self-Leadership online. And if it's something that you would like to think through or hash through as you think about your own voices in your head, then I'm happy to do some consulting work with you and chat about where this resonates. So you know how to get a hold of me, I'm sure. You can check out sherrywalling.com.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Zen Founder. Our theme song is A New Beginning by bensound.com, used under Creative Commons.